There is a new environmental sheriff in town. Well, actually, he's the new regional head of the EPA. That's the Environmental Protection Agency, created in 1970 by President Nixon to, quote, protect human health by safeguarding the air we breathe, water we drink, and land on which we live, end quote. In the more than 50 years since that goal was set, the task of protecting our environment has gone from challenging to seemingly overwhelming. So why take on the job? We asked that earlier today of David Cash, appointed last month by President Joe Biden as regional administrator for Region 1 of the EPA, and that includes Maine, New Hampshire, Vermont, Massachusetts, Rhode Island, Connecticut, and 10 tribal nations. And he jumped right in with why he wanted the role.
This is an incredible moment in time where a new administration came in at a time where the concern about climate change, about environmental justice, about seizing opportunities as we move to a clean energy future, or just coming to the fore. I can't think of a better time to have stepped into this position. And especially given my past history of having worked in state government in Massachusetts, having worked with colleagues across the region, and now to step in this where I can partner with them again. I can work with the incredible team at EPA and headquarters to advance what is a bold and transformative agenda that we have for environment, climate, and justice.
So you talk about a bold and transformative agenda. We know that New England, the New England region in particular, is vulnerable to climate. There have been a couple of reports that have come out recently, for example, around sea level rise, that really underscore that. It is a big thing to take on climate change. What's the one thing that 100% has to get done, David?
Oh, you know the one question that has to get done, because you know this problem is so big, we've got to be burning on all cylinders. So it's not just preparing for sea level rise, which we have to do. And it's not just preparing for the heat waves we're going to have. And it's not just preparing for fishing industry that's going to be hurt and agriculture that's going to be hurt. But what we have to do is tie together addressing those problems, figuring out how to be resilient and do it in a way that corrects past environmental justices. We have to do all of our investments, not just around adaptation and resilience, but our investments to move to a clean energy economy. We know that New England is going to be a hub for the development of offshore wind. Thousands and thousands and thousands of wind turbines are going to be developed off the coast of New England, out of sight, mind you. But that means thousands and thousands of jobs onshore to build these turbines, to bring them out, to maintain them. And if we need to be focusing on the development of those jobs in the communities in New England where tech booms have passed them by before, in communities that are vulnerable to climate change, in communities that have borne the burden of environmental impacts from the fossil fuel economy that we're replacing. Those jobs have to be sited in those areas so that communities that have environmental justice concerns can benefit from this move to a clean energy economy. At the same time that we as an agency and we as a country have to focus on adaptation and resilience because we know there's going to be significant impacts.
Well, we have a little bit of a reputation in New England and in Massachusetts for step forward, step back. So transportation climate initiative, but people withdraw. Trying to lead on wind, and yet we know that there are other regions in the world that are building wind infrastructure faster, building wind jobs faster. So how do you get from point A to point B when we've got some infrastructure issues around policy, around investment, around organization, et cetera?
So one way is, and I'm glad you mentioned infrastructure, because one way is that with the enormous funding that's going to be coming to the region from the bipartisan infrastructure legislation, much of that is targeted for upgrading our water infrastructure to make sure that people have clean water to drink when they turn on their taps, clean water comes out. But that funding also is going to be used to make those water treatment plants resilient in the face of climate change, to make sure that they're not flooded out the next time there's a big storm, to make sure they're not flooded out when the tide comes in too high. And that funding should be leveraged with Department of Energy funding, that's going to be going toward building the clean energy economy. So, I mean, that's billions of dollars that's coming to New England to enhance infrastructure. That's one. The other is that, you know, this administration has a all of government approach in terms of its support for and driving offshore wind. So no question that in the past, countries like China, Denmark moved much faster than we did on offshore wind. But we are catching up. And between Department of Energy on its offshore wind siting and permitting and EPA on its permitting, we're going to be moving offshore wind incredibly fast. This is going to be transformative for our economy. And by the way, that will leave the country a lot less vulnerable to the kind of price spikes and volatility that we're seeing right now. One dimension of which is because of the Russian invasion in Ukraine. We know that. We know that we are susceptible to that kind of economic backlashing when we're dependent on fossil fuels. That'll be a thing of the past when we move to wind and solar and electric vehicles.
So let's stay there for a minute because, it's worth noting you're at the EPA now. You do have a background in energy policy as well. And we are watching a crisis unfold in Ukraine. Gas prices, nuclear power plant that the exterior was bombed and taken over by the Russians. What does the average person not know to be worried about or to be watching for? We know about gas prices. That should concern us from an energy and climate standpoint about how this crisis is unfolding.
Yeah, I mean, the what's happening with obviously with the nuclear power plants is concerning. And I don't know any more beyond what's in the papers, but anytime, any place in the world where there's that kind of concern, everyone should be concerned. It happened in Fukushima. It happened with Chernobyl. So that's certainly something that we should all collectively be concerned about. But I also think there's, in some ways, as I was mentioning, a larger picture. And that is, imagine the future when we have met the goals of the Biden-Harris administration and we've moved away from fossil fuels and we have electric vehicles. We're not going to be subject to these kind of geopolitical roller coasters that happen because of our dependence on fossil fuel.
You talked about the Biden administration there. It's no secret that the Trump administration had what I'll call a fraught relationship with the EPA. More than 100 federal rollbacks on environmental protection policies, a real challenging back and forth. How is the morale of your team and what rebuilding do you need to do in the region to be ready for what you're trying to tackle?
Well, I'd say the morale is great now. I mean, we have staff who have devoted their careers to environmental protection, who are now working within an administration who is leaning forward, who is rolling back many of the regulations that the Trump administration had put in place to slow down environmental benefits and environmental progress. And, true, it was a really uncomfortable number of years, but now they see there's a new game in town, and that's very exciting. Now, there are lots of folks that EPA lost over those years, and we have to rebuild, and we have to build up, given the spending that we're going to be doing on the bipartisan infrastructure legislation. So there's a lot of excitement and a lot of activity that's going on now in EPA. That's one thing that I've certainly felt. I've been here in this position for 4 weeks, and it is an incredibly exciting place to be. And the staff are just extraordinary in terms of their devotion, expertise, et cetera.
Anything that surprised you or tickled your fancy or made you go, huh, that you weren't expecting in these first 4 weeks as you took over the role?
So here's one. As you mentioned, this is a big job. It's a 500 plus person organization. There are many, many moving parts. I had forgotten, or maybe I had never realized, a role that I could play as the head of that organization of telling the story of the importance of environmental protection, of telling the story of why environmental protection matters in everyday life. It matters because when you turn on the tap, you want to be certain that your water is healthy. It matters because when your kid is standing at the school bus stop, you don't want your kid breathing in diesel fumes. It matters because you want to understand that when big impacts of climate change come, there's a government agency that has their eye on this and are working to avoid the worst of these kinds of impacts. And if you are a member of a community that has been overburdened and is vulnerable, here's an agency that is devoted to making sure that we move to a future in which the benefits of environmental protection are shared in a just and equitable way, and that we correct some of the injustices of the past.
In your mental map, the literally the map of New England in your mind, when you think about the communities that need environmental justice attention, that have experienced environmental impact in unjust and disproportionate ways, are there two or three communities that specifically come to mind in our region where you think, I'm going to make sure we do better by them?
You know, I can't point to one in particular. They're all over the region, you know, and they're in urban areas and they're in rural areas and they're on the coast and they're inland. And each of them we want to pay particularly attention to. And of course, as you mentioned at the beginning, there are 10 tribes and we want to work really closely with the tribes to assure that we can offer them the best support that we can so that they can create the environmental future that they want for themselves. So I can point to lots of specifics in the way that I just mentioned. We're doing a big program on removing lead water pipes because there are communities, again, I can't mention all of them, but there are communities where people are worried about their water. That shouldn't happen. EPA and the federal government and state government, city government needs to step forward and correct those kinds of problems so that people can mix their formula for their baby and not worry about it. And mothers can drink water and not worry that their breast milk will have lead in it. Those are the kinds of things that all over the region we need to be careful about.
So climate news is tough. It's really tough. And I talk to you and I hear you excited and energized and charged up and hopeful. And you know, some of that is being in a leadership role and needing to carry that water and carry that message. But I do hear in you real hope. So where is the hope coming from? And what gives you hope moving forward?
So I've been in public service for and worked in state government for 10 years. And at least in this role, because I could probably say this, the same thing if I was in the private sector or if I was in an NGO, I've seen real advances. You know, when I started working in state government, there were no electric vehicles on the road. There were very few homes and businesses in Massachusetts that had solar panels on their roof. And so decisions can be made by government, by individuals, by cities and towns, by states that can really move the ball forward to protect our environment and to get really big economic benefits. If you're an installer of solar panels or energy efficiency, you can't outsource that. That has to be a local job. And we need to be intentional and thoughtful about making sure that the communities that have been most vulnerable are those that benefit. So there's a lot of hope because I've seen a lot of good things happen. And if you go back to the history of EPA, and maybe you can remember this, certainly many of our listeners will, you know, you couldn't go boating and swimming in Boston Harbor. EPA and many other parties got together to fix that. We don't have rivers catching on fire anymore. That's because EPA and cities and states and community groups got together to fix that. And so while there's no question climate change is scary, climate change is overwhelming, far too little has been done to address it, I still think there are big opportunities and there's still a chance for us to move our economy in such a way that we avoid the worst of what climate change is going to bring and to take advantage of the economic and justice benefits that can come forward with just and wise policy.
All right. David Cash is the newly appointed regional administrator for Region 1 of the EPA. David, thanks for joining us.
Thank you so much for having me.